evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. I am your host, Chris George Zuger, and you have entered the Den of Lore. Pull your chair up to the fire, grab your glass of scotch or whatever you have available, whether it's a beer, a rum, a few shots of tequila, maybe some absinthe, who knows? Either way, we've got an impressive show on the docket for you today. None other than... well, let's see, we got Denver on the show. And although we've got Rich Giordano in on the second night, or the second hour of the night. And I do know that we have, oh, that's right, a very special guest, Mr. Michael Horn, none other than associate of famed alien UFO contactee Billy Mayer. And I know that we're going to have a fantastic time discussing a lot of topics with regards to the paranormal. This is a straight detour into the interesting and the strange, and we're going to be kicking things off with none other than myself on camera. There we go. And how's everyone doing today? Is my hair okay? My beard still hasn't come in on the sides there. And this show is brought to you by none other than our patrons who have supported this show and ensured that we can stay 100% ad-free with no breaks besides the music interlude in between the 2 hours. No corporate sponsors, so we can talk about whatever we want, however we want to. And we are 100% listener-funded, which means that we are allowing this community to be built by you, and we support the community as well and are 100% accountable to you. So if I screw up, you can give me shit. I give you full permission to be able to do that. And don't forget to go check out patreon.com/denoflore if you want to be able to support for as little as $1 a day. Or not a day, a month. scaring you there for a bit. And so we also do have separate packages, and I know we were supposed to have a pre-show, a little bit of a mess up with dinner, and I had to apparently make dinner today, and you know what, I make a mean steak on the barbecue, so I'm gonna go and do a little bit of an extra for the after show, and I'm hoping that you all can join me for that on patreon.com/denoflore. You have to be a patron to be in the show, and you can call in, and maybe anybody wants to be able to stick around, you can call and ask me questions, find out about what's going to be coming up with the show later on in the month, and we can talk about things like that. And I want to be able to give a special shout out to our illustrious masters, Jackie from across the pond, Pat from Brooklyn, to our masters, Kevin, Jenny, Dobermeer, Lee, Chuck Schwartz, Jared, Mrs. Fox, Joshua, Wayne, and our den mother, Ellen, and to our fellow craft, Audrey, Eclipse, Eric, Photopic, Nick, Cray, Venice, Charles, and Hobby, and to our intern apprentices, Mark, Mike, Martin, and to our patrons, Katie, Christopher M., and Robin. And if you are not a patron yet, go to patreon.com/denoflore. You can get master level for as little as $9 a month. And I have not released who the master class is for this month, and I'm going to leave this one to be a very big surprise for you guys. So, I'm going to move on to the next camera to be able to ask the next big question from our good friend Denver Michaels. Denver, how are you doing? Oh, let me.
How's it going?
I forgot to turn up the channel, and I know we've got Mr. Horn on the line as well, so he's going to be joining us for our opening segment. After I do the good brotherly thing and plug the book, because I know that it is, one, fantastically written, and two, incredibly affordable as far as paranormal is concerned. You cannot get better value in the paranormal world than with a Denver Michaels book, because they're fairly inexpensive and you get tons of mileage out of it, just like the mileage you got on your road trip out to Atlantic City. First of all, while I was doing research for the book, I noticed you had a tattoo in your arm. What's up with the tattoo?
Which one?
The one on this arm? This arm.
This arm. This one? Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, it's an S. Okay.
Yeah, so where this big bar here used to be, when I was a teenager, me and my buddies used to give ourselves tattoos with India ink. So I had to cover that up some way, and my wife's name is Stephanie, so I got a big giant S on my arm. So
smart thinking.
There you have.
there you go. And, well, Okay. And did that have nothing to do with the choice for the trip out to Atlantic City? You didn't say, okay, well, honey, I've got this tattoo, which, you know.
No, it was just one of those things where, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, me and my buddies, I guess just to piss off our parents, we would we'd get drunk on Friday nights and just give each other tattoos. But whatever, man, kids are stupid, and we all put like our initials on our left arm right here, and it's just stupid kids, man. If I caught one of my kids doing that, I'd freaking choke them to death, I swear.
Michael, you have kids?
Me?
Yes.
Is Michael? Michael Horn? Yes, I do.
And have you ever had to go on road trips with them and get into any type of interesting situations?
Actually, I've traveled extensively with my daughter, and I raised her myself as a single father from when she was 10 months old, so we created a really good bond and good relationship with each other. And I've traveled with her and her boyfriend. It's never really been problematic. I guess it might be different if I had one or two rambunctious boys, or if I had, you know, a couple of teenage girls or something like that. I don't know. But I've always had really good traveling experiences.
Well, and Denver, how was the trip down to Atlantic City?
Well, Atlantic City, someplace I actually used to go to quite a bit, and I still probably go out there about once a year. And by quite a bit, I mean, you know, maybe a couple times a year. I don't want to make it sound like I've got a gambling problem or something. But anywho, yeah. So yeah, you know, it's just one of those places. Yeah, there's one of the casinos out there that. That has a lot, several restaurants with celebrity chefs, and you know, my wife's a big. She's always watching Food Network and likes the celebrity chefs and all that. So, pretty much that's what I go out there for. And once in a while, they have an event there with all the celebrity chefs, and it's one of those things. Like with the book, you know, it's one of those things that I had most of the writing done years ago, but I kind of kept bumping it. And it's like you realize as you're traveling to places just how many weird things kind of lie along the way. Because, you know, no matter where I go, I'm always looking for, you know, what's the local cryptid in the area? What's the, you know, what's some cool places? And so that was kind of the idea behind the book, was to give folks an overview of some of the cool things that lie along the path.
And what did you like, is the book a collection of stories? Is it just, you know, an overall narrative of the trip, or is it like we were driving down I-5, whatever. And you know, we got hit by this giant Mothman, you know, that came out of nowhere. That now, was a log.
It's not so much that. It kind of chronicles, like, you know, you leave from my house, you pass through four states: Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, and New Jersey. And I'm just kind of like, maybe kind of like that annoying know-it-all in the car, kind of like my granddad used to do. You know, he'd be like, oh, look at those sycamores, or look at that gum tree, or, you know, just like, you would just like go down the road identifying all the trees. But I, instead of that, I'm like, you know, in that patch of woods, there's this cryptid, and, oh, we just drove past this haunted building. And, you know, I'll give some stories about, you know, hauntings and, you know, certain locations. Like, for instance, you know, in Baltimore, you drive almost right through Baltimore to get where we're going. And, you know, you can imagine any big city, there's going to be places that have their share of hauntings. But I included a little blurb on the Baltimore Ravens training facility, which is supposed to be haunted. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that. So there's some pretty cool little tidbits.
And what was the most interesting thing that you found on your travels, or at least that you had run into?
And the most interesting thing, I'll tell you, for me, and this is probably the most interesting for me. I don't know if it would be for other folks, but along the route, you cross the Susquehanna River, you know, where it widens out and forms the mouth of the Chesapeake. Well, and this kind of relates to what you and I are working on together. It was there that Captain John Smith encountered a tribe of giants. And that's not really paranormal, but I put it in the book anyway because it's cool. And I just like to, you know, kind of talk about cool stuff. These were the Susquehannas. And John Smith, in his book, General Histories of Virginia, I think that's the proper name. Anyway, I've got it in the book. I think it was published 1624, thereabouts. Don't quote me, but he's got a map in his book of... And in the corner of his map, you know, where the, and you know, let me back up, maps back then were works of art, you know, there's mm-hmm. all the drawings and things like that. And in the corner of the map where the Chesapeake starts, he's got this just giant warrior, and he calls the Susquehannocks a giant-like people. And he described his warriors, you know, having a calf that was 27 inches long, shooting an arrow that's 45 inches long. And for anyone who's ever done any archery with, say, a compound bow, like myself, I'm average size. I shoot an arrow that's about, 28 inches long. So that's a pretty big dude. So anyway, for me, that was kind of the most interesting thing was, the giants up there.
How did you recount the story of the giants? Like, did you go into any of the previous works that you had done? Did you do it more of as a historical recount, or is it more of an?
Yeah, I just kind of the way I laid it out was, right before you cross into Delaware, you reach the mouth of the Chesapeake, and I'm just kind of like, coincidentally, there was a tribe of giants here at one point in time. And then I just, used some of John Smith's quotes and how he described them and that sort of thing. That's really kind of the only thing that I put in there that really wouldn't, you wouldn't say paranormal or cryptozoology, but I thought it was kind of a cool little ad for people.
And what do you hope to at least be able to accomplish with this latest tome, this work of art?
Well, I mean, the main thing I'd like to accomplish, this is just what I consider easy reading. I mean, it's only like 125 pages. It's, nothing groundbreaking. I hope that, people will learn a little bit. I mixed in some Civil War history, a little bit of colonial era history, some of the more obscure things, I guess. And I guess kind of what I would like people to get out of it is no matter where you go, there's always these haunted places. No matter where you are, there's always cryptids not far away. No matter where you go, and no matter where you go, you are driving right past, all of these haunted places and all of these haunted woods. And there's cryptid creatures. There's just all kinds of weird things. No matter where you go, they're all around us.
And did you manage to at least run into any ghosts? Any Bigfoot? Did you stay in a haunted house or a haunted place?
I didn't find Bigfoot, but I do recount a couple stories in the book of some personal stories. And one museum that I stopped in with my wife, she had a kind of a encounter that made her a little bit scared, that sort of thing. So I won't spoil it. And again, it's no big deal, but it's there's a couple cool little personal narratives in the book.
And I'm hoping that you can all enjoy it. I know that we had a few people who won the contest, the first people who are supposed to be in the chat room today. And I took one from the Facebook just because I have to be a little bit fair. So, Anthony Derry, you get a copy. Contact me and I'll make sure we can get that, as well as, if I'm not mistaken, it's Lee, Ellen, and Jenny who also won. And then the reason I had to take one from Anthony was because you were actually the fourth person or the fifth person in chat, Denver, on YouTube, and you can't win a copy of your own book. So I have to be fair. You wrote the book. Yeah. You have one already.
Like, that's true. I just print it off.
Now, to be able to move on to the next section, and I'm actually getting pretty good at being able to keep time on this thing now. It's like, you'd think after almost 2 years, I'd get a little better at this. So let me just switch over here. Again, I'm going to officially welcome Michael Horn onto the show. Michael, we have a graphic of you up. I believe you're actually at a conference with this one that I'm using in place of Denver's wonderful face and fantastic long sleeve. It's long sleeve shirt or short sleeve?
This is short sleeve tonight.
Okay, well, there we go. And
usually I wear long sleeves, but
now, Michael, you just came back from a trip to Switzerland, and
yes, I did.
How was the flight over the Atlantic? The last time I flew on the over the Atlantic, I took Royal Maroc Air, and I have to say, from a service standpoint, like, when they try and find your bag, which inevitably is going to get lost, they're fantastic at that. But you're scared shitless going over because the plane's from like 1960 something, and you're afraid it's going to fall apart. I'm hoping you had a better experience than I did.
Well, I think I did, Chris. I flew over on British Airways, and I always travel with one bag almost any and everywhere I will go. I do not like checking bags, you know, especially after a long flight. You have to go down to a carousel and you're, you know, semi-conscious and figure out, you know, waiting at the right carousel so you don't spend 2 hours waiting at something for a flight that's coming from Japan and you weren't on it. Flying time for me on both legs of this approached a total of about 15 hours. So it's kind of it's a bit of a drag time-wise. And I managed to avoid most effects of jet lag, but still every now and then I'll get hit by a little wave of it. So that's my transatlantic report.
Well, I'm glad. I'm very thankful that you'd be able to join us today. And again, the story that you had recounted, and I know that I've heard it before, which is of Billy Mayer and his encounters with various extraterrestrials and UFOs over the course of his life. And, you know, to be honest, at least on the Den of Lore, we're a slightly different paranormal show. We're more of the optimistic, open-minded, skeptical show, where we talk about things from the experience of, that's pretty cool, and then we look at things kind of objectively, and I know that from this story, it's extremely inspiring. At the same time, it's also very controversial.
Yeah, yes, it is. But I should say this. You know, it's really only controversial, in my opinion, when people, and I'm speaking about a lot of the people that I've encountered over the years and decades, when they fail to do due diligence objectively and using scientific standards for evaluating the evidence in the case. And I also, you know, recently I've focused a lot on saying this in one form or another, and that is that the confirmed existence of advanced intelligent space traveling life forms would be the single most important discovery, occurrence, event, whatever you want to call it, in human history, exceeded only by actual contact with confirmed corroborated extraterrestrials. And of course, this is, it's one notch above the foundational question, which would be, what would the reason be for such contacts if indeed they occurred? In terms of the UFO community and UFO groups, they never seem to even contemplate this particular question or proposition. It's taken for granted in so-called ufology circles that, why, there must be just simply millions of ETs vacationing here and in contact with people and having babies with them and abducting them. And yet, and I just say this, I have to date, after almost 40 years of research, seen not one piece of evidence from any and all of these sources, individuals or groups, that can be deemed to have been authenticated as being of extraterrestrial origin or manufacture. Yet, when the Meyer case is presented with its vaults full of every kind of evidence one would want, the people in ufology actually attack it. That's one of the most mind-boggling things that I've had to deal with. I don't mind skepticism, by the way, because I think skepticism, healthy skepticism, is required in life to navigate it. There's a difference when people identify themselves. I'm not obviously referring to you guys because I don't know enough about everything you do, but I have encountered and I've challenged and I've defeated everyone who would accept it. That is from all of the top professional international skeptics. When people identify themselves as skeptics, as opposed to being scientists, then I know that they are already prejudicial. And that's fine, but scientists can have skepticism, but they don't identify themselves as skeptics. And for this reason, any and all claims can be subjected to the scientific method. The word extraordinary, people say extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. What's an extraordinary claim? That the Earth, goes around the sun? That used to be an extraordinary claim. So instead of, modifying the words that way, extraordinary, really, it's like all claims can and should be subjected to scientific methodology, and we can determine whether or not they are true, and whether or not, if they are true, it bothers and upsets our paradigms.
Now, we've got about, I know that we started the show at about 8:30. I'm going to be bringing Rich Giordano onto the show from the Paranormal Code in about 10 minutes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to at least get the background story, as it were, and ask if you can provide that as an opening, and then we'll bring Richard in after the break, and we can make sure that we can go on till 10 p.m. Eastern, and I think it'll be about 6, almost 7 p.m. Pacific by the time we wrap up tonight. But how did this entire story start in the first place?
Well, actually, it started in 1942 in Switzerland. A young boy named Edward Albert Meyer was with his father in a field, and he and his father observed a strange, huge, disc-like object flying overhead. This was in 42, towards the tail end of the Second World War, and young Edward wanted to know what the heck that was, and his father simply said, well, it might be one of Hitler's secret weapons. They didn't know. Shortly after that, not long after that at all, young Edward, who would later in life be named Billy, heard a voice speaking to him in his head, which was a little bit shocking for him. And he was a little troubled, but he was curious. And the voice was that of an elderly man speaking to him in his Swiss-German dialect. And he pondered that for a while. And within a day or two afterwards, he was out playing in the fields and decided to go farther into the forest. And in the forest where there was a clearing, there was also a pear-shaped craft sitting on, I think it was three legs or struts or something. And in front of it was a man that looked like an elderly human being. Billy said that to him at the time, the man appeared to be about 90 years old, wearing what the closest thing he could relate to was a deep sea diver's suit without a helmet. And he felt like this person was friendly and benevolent. He approached him. He was welcomed by this man who invited him to come on board this craft. And that began 11 years of tutelage, mentoring, and teaching by this man who called himself Svath, S-F-A-T-H, and he invited young Meyer to, partake of an education with him that was really quite remarkable, singularly remarkable, and it entailed not only traveling around our world and visiting different places and meeting different people who were or would be major, players on the world stage, but it entailed also traveling off of our world and seeing our world from a distance. very interesting things. Now, again, this is, you know, we ask about the story, how it began and all of that, and this is what, you know, we're told. So that was a contact and mentorship that lasted until Meyer was 16 years of age, at which point this elderly man was passing away, and he turned over his, you know, duties, if you will, as a teacher, to a woman who called herself Ascot. I think you're showing in that photograph that you have up there, the illustration in the back, is of this woman whose name was Ascot, we're told. And it depends, you know, how much more you want me to, I can keep on going on this, or if you have any questions about that at this point, that's fine. Let me know, and then I can, you know, kind of go into it further.
Well, for Ascot, I know that there were photographs that were apparently taken of her.
Yes, and there's a controversy about that, and this, of course, is something that, you know, we always expect will come up because it has been answered very well. We even have a whole page about it on my website. And here's what happened, according to the information in the case. And I like to say that when there are things that I cannot, let's say, prove myself, such as when something was published by Meyer and how accurate and prophetically accurate, etc. So what happened in this case was that this woman, Ascot, and another woman, Neera, were on a large craft, allegedly, with the father of Meyer's third contact person, who went by the name of Semyaze. And at that point, he was allowed to take a couple photographs of them. At that time, I think it was actually at that time, if not a couple years later, he was told, and this is, we're talking 70, 75 to 78, right in there, he was told that there were two American women who were entertainers who were virtually doubles for Ascot and Neera. And this, by the way, is all in copyrighted books that go back long before the controversy arose. These conversations were all recorded and published. So he said, gee, I'd like to look in on that. And can we? And he was told, no, for certain reasons, we're going to leave that alone at this time. Well, in my opinion, the certain reasons were that what happens with Meyer and his films and his photographs, he never developed anything himself. He never had the equipment. He never had the skill. He never had the interest. He took his photos. He brought them to a specific camera shop called Bear Camera in a small town not far from him. They were sent out to the Kodak labs or whatever. But what started to happen, once Meyer's photographs started to become known and his contacts being reported, is that many photographs and films were interrupted in the process. Some disappeared completely. Some came back manipulated, falsified. Meyer himself never paid that much attention to the photographs. He would get them back. He'd throw them in shoe boxes and things like that. Well, it turned out later on that they found that these some of the photographs that had been manipulated were photos of Ascot and Neera. And indeed, what had happened was that the doubles were the women who were two of the performers on the Dean Martin show at the time. Now, this could, people could say, oh, it's a convenient story, except that, as people could see, if they want to go on to my website, I can always give links later, and you can read the article and all, but there's a couple of shoes that drop in this that are very interesting. Here's what happened. When the photos that were discovered to be falsified were analyzed, what we see is that images were superimposed and moved around on the falsified photos. Now, first thing is, Meyer had no means whatsoever to take photographs of the Dean Martin show off of a television set for any number of reasons, which we also outline in the articles. There is no proof that he ever saw those shows, that they were broadcast in the area in which he lived, that he had access to them in his little remote area up there, let alone that he would have had the foreknowledge and the proper equipment to set up a camera, get no glare, get nothing peripheral, but only nice, clear photo captured in the moment from the Dean Martin show. So what happens is, analysis of those photos, when they're looked at, they can be seen to be composites utilizing photographs of these dancers and singers and another person or two. about a year and a half ago, I get contacted by a woman, calls me up saying that she is friends with a lady, and they would like to go and meet Billy with in Switzerland. And I said, well, what's this about? And she said, well, the woman who's my friend, her name is Michelle De La Fava. And she was one of the two women who were on the Dean Martin show. She was the one whose photo had been manipulated to look like Asket. And she, because this is something kind of involving her for 40 years, she would really love to go and meet Billy. And I said, well, look, he's had a heart valve operation and stuff like that. He doesn't generally meet with people that he hasn't known for a long time, but I'm going to ask him for you because it's so interesting. Well, as I kind of suspected, he said he would make the exception and the two women were welcome to come and to visit with him. And they even videotaped their you know, visit with him. It was very nice. And it's online somewhere. I could always find a link or you could find it. And what happened was that Michelle knew. She said, look, I know. I followed and read about Billy and everything all these years. I know he didn't do that, you know, manipulate our photos. He's an honest man. And so they went, they met him, and they came away, of course, feeling the same way. So when I went to see Billy last year, he had Michelle's photo up on his desk and with a drawing of Asket. And he said, you know, she still looks so much like Michelle, you know, like Asket, except she looks older because Asket, you know, is much older and a different frame of reference for aging. But he said, it is just so amazing to sit there with her and she looks so much like Asket. So a lot of people got very hung up on this or photos allegedly taken in space by Meyer, which were all part of these outer space photos that had been manipulated. Interestingly enough, not one of Meyer's over 1,200 clear, primarily daytime UFO photos has ever been shown to be hoaxed or falsified. And I have taken them myself to the second company of Academy Award-winning special effects people to analyze it. It goes on and on, but I'm glad to try to answer any more questions about that or anything else you like. But that's kind of the story on that. There was no reason for Meyer to, you know, hoax anything, and he didn't have the technology to do it. So that's kind of been put to rest.
Okay. And you know what? We're going to be able to at least ask a few of those questions now that we've got a little bit of context on this. Folks who are at home, again, sit tight. I actually have to reset the counter on that one. It's the problem with the production software. I hit the timer. It keeps on going. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in about 10 minutes. Hit the water closet, grab yourself a drink, kick back and relax. We will return. Are back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking around. I have to find a way to be able to have that music auto fade out, because right now it cuts out like a dull knife through any type of luncheon meat you can think of. I know that makes no sense, but we're going to go with it. Denver has stepped out for the first hour, and he is off to spend some time with his wife. And as somebody who is a married man himself, I have to say thank you very much for joining us and for being a family man. It is great to hear people who have what is important in life straight and narrow. And I just need to make sure I can stop the music on the Spreaker. And if you're hearing us right now on YouTube or on Twitch, Periscope, if you joined us, I have to say, again, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and that bell, which will allow you to get notifications for when we go live, because sometimes we may actually be live during the afternoons or on your way to work. Wouldn't that be fantastic? So, also, don't forget to go check out patreon.com/denoflore. I know that we had some new patrons that came in recently, and I want to make sure that those people can be recognized as well. And for all those who, I keep getting asked by people who are have shows, such as you, Rich, who actually ask about Patreon. Do you have a Patreon?
No, not yet. I don't know if I'm going to go the Patreon route or a donate button. I don't know what's better. People are telling me the donate button's better. It goes right to your PayPal account. I don't know. I don't know any much about it.
It's with the donate button, we have one for PayPal as well. So that if people just want to give directly through PayPal, they can do that. With the content enabled by level on Patreon, it gives a little more freedom as far as, or at least ease of use as far as making sure that patrons who have a certain, What's the term? Reward can actually get the reward. I can probably do it through the website as well, but the last time I did that, I really screwed up the way that the live stream worked.
That's the thing with me. I don't want to have to put a Patreon button up and then I got to do extra work for you. And forget about it. I'm doing a do the show. You want to give me money? Go ahead. I'm not doing anything extra.
And then that's Rich Giordano of, Giordano of the Paranormal Code. It's gonna, they're going to be going live in about 45 minutes. And also, again, a special thanks to Kathleen Cooper as well as Lynn Olson, who are part of our Fellowcraft group. You are helping us directly with the show and keeping the lights on. And I'm apparently getting news in that, I'm getting news in from my wife as far as the election results here in Ontario, and it's probably not very good. We've gone the Donald Trump route. So it's the only reason she'd be using that language. But hey, you know, no one's perfect. Well, I guess I'll see you guys in 4 years. I you know, you live in Arizona, right, Rich? Maybe I should move down there with you.
We'll have to.
Michael, if you're still there, again, I want to say thank you very much again for joining us on the show. Now, regarding the story that you had given, you know, the main thing comes down to the claims that are made. And I'm the type of person who, if there's a claim that's made, there has to be some type of evidence to be able to back it up. It's, you know, one of the biggest complaints that I know has been with the photo, with it being on the Dean Martin show. And if there were modifications to the photo, what evidence has been put forth and that is visible or viewable by third parties or anybody who's interested to see if the claims of them being edited are true?
Well, as I say, I have a page up on my website, which is theyfly.com, theyfly.com. And if you go to that website and you type in Asket, A-S-K-E-T, or Asket and Nera, N-E-R-A, you'll get a page that shows not only the photos, but a lot of information and analyses. And it's fine with me. I mean, if you want, we can talk about that all you want, but I want to just emphasize something. This is not the Asket and Nera photo case. This is the Billy Meyer UFO contacts that are singularly evidence-rich and singularly authentic, and that I'm glad to, you know, go into any kind of explanation, answers, or what have you. We have to understand something else here, and that is that this man, who's been the target of quite a number of assassination attempts, many, many hardships in his life, people failed to kill him physically. So the next best thing is you try to assassinate his character. And there have been no shortage of attempts on that, but none of them have actually succeeded because the claims against him turn out to be false, to be manipulated themselves in some ways. So we can, however you want to proceed is fine with me, but I can also, you know, lay out something for you and for your listeners as to how one proceeds in an investigation where there actually is evidence, testable evidence, and where that evidence has indeed been tested, not once, but multiple times, and not by UFO experts, which is a very silly claim, but by independent experts, military, aerospace, photographic, metallurgic, sound, in every category you could want, who were not connected to Meyer, who were independent. So, there's even fairly recent independent analyses that's even more conclusive than the earlier ones. But just tell me how you want to proceed or what you want to look at in what order. It's fine with me.
Well, it's the manner that we usually at least look at the evidence and, being a host, and maybe it's because I'm jaded to a certain extent. I've had people who've had very compelling evidence. Denver's brought me very compelling evidence before. And, you know, at that time when he brought the evidence forward, I'm like, well, this could very well be a UFO. And, you know, in retrospect, I'm thinking, okay, well, did I let my emotions at least want it to be to believe that this is evidence is being presented to me is actually true, or did I do the due diligence to be able to make sure that it was actually true? And this is more of a meta commentary on the entire UFO community as a whole. And it's, as far as the story is concerned, the story can be a certain way and it can be very compelling, but there have also been a lot of hoaxes in ufology as well. And the idea of something being absolutely true or you know, I could say it's possible, but I, even as a host, can't say that something is absolutely true without a shadow of a doubt, or even let any guest on if I can't at least be able to be objective and say, okay, well, here's the opposite side of the story. Here's what other people who are listening may be able to say. It's not to say that his story is not true, but you know, there's a certain amount of objectivity and a certain amount of integrity that we have to have as broadcasters and as UFO fans ourselves. One example, and this is one that is always a very fun one, and Rich, you may remember this one. Do you remember Jeffrey Boyd Jr.? So we had a gentleman who trying to present some evidence to me and a few other podcast hosts about 6 months back. Or so, I forget exactly how long ago it was. And,
that's right, yeah.
And it was a apparent NASA UFO feed of a pair of UFOs that were in orbit that were captured by either a satellite or by, I forget exactly if it was a satellite or the space station. And I looked at the evidence, and it's not because I'm a UFO expert. It's because I'm a video editing expert. I'm a photography expert. I'm, you know, a data analyst. I'm a marketer. I'm, you know, a psychological profiler when it comes to advertising and a strategist as well. So I looked at it from the standpoint of, okay, well, from my expertise in all of these different fields, how can I at least piece these things together? And it was essentially found, and I was able to prove through a fairly intensive 2 days of analysis, that the claims that this person had were not only not true, but the evidence that he was presenting was essentially a video that was taken and downloaded from Vimeo, which is a streaming site very close to YouTube, that he then played on his TV and then recorded with his phone to say that it was a NASA feed. And the most damning thing about it was that at the bottom right-hand corner, it said video 4, or like the actual video title was in the play bar of the screen. So, you know, and this individual had professed that it was absolutely true, and I've got screenshots upon screenshots of all caps letters written about how this person was claiming that it was true. And I basically proved that it was not. So this is the type of integrity that we have to have. And I'm not here to attack anybody. So I'm asking questions,
fine,
as it were.
But since you brought that up, then I assume that you have read the preliminary investigation report on the photographs that were done between 1978 and 1982.
For those ones, I have read the preliminary reports, yes.
Okay. And do you have some reason to take objection to, let's say, their conclusions?
Well, it's not being there myself, you always have to, anybody would have to be able to question, okay, well, what was the motivation behind that being analyzed, or what was the relationship between the individuals who are making the analysis? The report itself is a piece of information, but there's also the intent of why that information was presented in a certain way. And even even from that report, I can take it and say, okay, this is something that's plausible, but stating 100% that something's verifiable true, that would be very difficult. That's
so. Okay. You know, for the sake of clarity here, let me explain a little bit to you and your audience. That was the first pass of independent expert analyses done on Meyer's 35 millimeter camera, you know, photographs of craft. And you know from looking at that report, and I'm not a photographer or a photographic expert, but I've read that report a number of times, and I saw that there are very, very discreet, specific protocols, steps that were taken, conclusions based on those steps. And that wasn't the only analyses at that time that was done on the photographs. The photographs were also analyzed, at least briefly, by Michael Malin from NASA JPL Mars Mission, Robert Post from JPL. There were a host of people who were not connected to the Meyer case. The UFO community was deliberately excluded from putting their hands on the evidence. Just a couple of years ago, a man named Raul Zahi, and also on an occasion one of them, Chris Locke, who both of whom are photographic experts and who have been interested in this case for a long time, did three separate new photographic analyses. One was of a film clip and the other two were of photographs. They listed their state-of-the-art technologies, which are contemporary computer-based and online accessible technologies for evaluating the photographs. They went to great extents, as a matter of fact, to especially with the WC UFO, which I assume you've read that analysis as well. But here's something that happened a year and a half ago, a little more than that. And that is that I got a call on a Saturday morning from a guy I did not know, kind of a gruff sounding fellow, older guy, who said, my name is Joe. I've come upon this Billy Meyer UFO case. Now, I think it could be a hoax. Are you willing to talk to me about it? I said, of course. So for 3 months, we went back and forth. Joe didn't tell me any more about himself at the time. It didn't matter to me. He was asking very intelligent questions. And then at the end of about 3 months, for whatever reason, we got bored with each other, whatever. I didn't hear from him until August of last year. At that time, Joe called me back on a Saturday morning. He's an American expat living in Asia. And he said, I will tell you about your Billy Meyer case. And now first I will tell you who I am. He said, I was the top case supervisor for the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigation from 1965 to 1971. He accompanied that claim with the transfer of documents to me via email. Clearly, U.S. government documents. His name is right there. The rather glowing endorsements. He lived up to his own promo in terms of what the government had to say about him. He said, I have personally vetted hundreds of cases. I've supervised them. I've been sitting in on them, et cetera, et cetera. And that means people not only in the military, but people who pose a threat to this country as moles, as spies. I've personally vetted many people who were politicians, who were in office, who were seeking higher office, people who could end up with their fingers on the nuclear trigger. So my credentials are solid, and I am an investigator. I'm not a UFO person, and I will tell you now, if you want, about your Billy Meyer case. And I said, well, okay. He said, it is 100% ironclad, authentic, and I will personally take on any skeptics who want to make a claim otherwise. And I said, fine. And he did, by the way. But he said, let me explain to you how this works. He said, in any kind of a legitimate investigation, your criminal, forensic, a military investigation, you have to consider means, motive, and opportunity. And he said, so I went back to the information and evidence you had on a page that has this man, Billy Meyer, in 1964 in India. And he is interviewed by a credible reporter for a very prominent Indian newspaper that at the time had been in existence for over 100 years. And he said it was very interesting to me because the reporter had found this man, Billy Meyer, who was basically at that time a vagabond in India doing certain things, but he had a photo album with him of 80 UFO photos. So my question, my first question to any skeptic is, please produce evidence, not just claims and suspicions and theories, as to where this man in 1964 in rural India obtains 80 UFO photos, about a dozen of which you still have. And you show the photographs yourselves. He says, unless that can be done, I don't want to hear from skeptics because they don't know what they're talking about. He said, let me explain this further. I did further work. I looked up one of the eyewitnesses, who was a young girl at the time. Her name is Pobal Cheng. Indeed, as you had reported, she is now a retired diplomat to the United Nations for her country. She served there for 12 years. Some years back, from now anyhow, she came forward about 20 years ago. And she gave a press conference with another woman from India who were eyewitnesses. She referred to the photos, showed where she was in relation to these photos, what she knew about the properties, etc. She attested to the fact that this man, Billy Meyer, was on this property at this time, that she and other people were eyewitnesses to these craft, were eyewitnesses to this woman who's identified as Asket. And he said, you know, I also decided to look into this guy, Wally Gentleman. Wally Gentleman was the special effects director for the film 2001. That was the special effects director for Stanley Kubrick's film. And indeed, Meyer's film had been brought to him. And when he was asked if he, as a special effects director could duplicate Meyer's film. He said, well, I probably could. I would need a crew of 15 and about $80,000. We're talking 1980. He said, because everything in this film works. It's right. The shadow's in the right places. If you're telling me that some one-armed man with a camera himself took this, I'm puzzled, because otherwise it would have to be a professionally done thing. I personally, in 2006, went to the company called Uncharted Territory, and they won the Academy Award for Independence Day, and I showed the same film clip to them, you know, some years later after Wally Gentleman had the opportunity, and I asked them about that film clip, and they said, well, we could duplicate it now with CG, but otherwise what we're looking at here would have to be done, you know, with a crane and a very, very long wire. That would produce a lot of problems with the stability of the object, and you'd have to cover up the evidence of other strings. And anyway, my point is this. When, on top of all the people that have, you know, stepped forward, and I have two aerospace experts as well, one retired from NASA, one recently retired from Orbital Flight Systems. When people analyze without having a horse in the race or a dog in the fight, and especially when a guy like Joe, whose name is Joe Tisk, as an expert investigator, runs the protocol and lays it out, means, motive, opportunity, and he eliminates all of those possibilities of hoax from 1964 on, then, with all due respect, when people say, well, I'm an expert with this and that, and he could have done, I'm not interested in what people think somebody could have done. I am interested in, to this day, still irreproducible photos, meaning that the only way that even the best attempts at duplicating Meyer's photos have been done with models, the model is still easily determined by any form of photo analysis. And we even have one of the photos from the most, you know, controversial photos, the wedding cake UFO, one of the photos that for over 30 years remained simply a gold object against a black background that all the skeptics so confidently told us was simply a model against a black curtain, until Mr. Zahi, while he was doing his 74-page analysis of the WC UFO, dropped that photo into Photoshop and messed with the contrast and the brightness, and voila! It's a real object, apparently, because it's hovering over a graveled road next to a grassy hillside with one of the Swiss meter postmarkers visible, and for 30-plus years, nobody knew what was there because they did not take that photo right off the internet and put it into Photoshop, which Billy Meyer didn't possess in 1964, 75, or 81.
I'm not sure if Photoshop would run on anything at that point. It barely runs on my computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, in other words, what I'm trying to do here, in all due respect, we have actually moved on significantly from any debate, and I don't mind being in it again, but when someone like a U.S. Air Force investigator simply applies the technology of investigation, he uses this analogy in his article on my blog, Chris. He says, look, let's say we're investigating a murder, and we've got the body there, and next to the body there's a gun, there's a wallet, and it belongs to this person, this gun belongs to this person, and there's an eyewitness who says, that guy did it, Bill did it. He says, that should really seal the case except for one thing. There is a video of that man 1,000 miles away at a wedding at that time, out of town for several days. He says, the rest of the accusative evidence and claims are irrelevant. How they got there? They could have been put there. We don't care. That man was somewhere else. He is innocent. Case is over. So indeed, Joe actually did. He got in touch with two of the more virulent skeptics to talk to them about this and see if he could understand what, you know, their issues were and explain to them how real research works. He came away from both conversations saying to me, I don't know how you can talk to these people. They don't know what they're doing. They're not researchers. They're not investigators. They don't know a darn thing. They simply have crazy theories. and they want to try and make this singularly authentic case fit them. It doesn't, it won't, because it's real and they're full of hot air. Now, that was a guy who's been entrusted with protecting the security of this country and vetting out deception at every level. On top of that, he said, after doing all the other things I mentioned, I went online, I went onto YouTube, and I watched every video I could find of Billy Meier, whether it was in German or in English, and he said to me, I will tell you this, he is the single most honest man I've ever observed as an interviewer. He says, I'm watching this man's body language. That happens to correspond with the opinion of the independent military body language expert I brought in 2006, 2008, to interview in our film, The Silent Revolution of Truth, to observe Billy Meier speaking and to observe Po Bo Cheng speaking, in both cases with no volume, so that on the off chance that this military guy understood German, he wouldn't know what Meier was talking about, by turning off the volume, and with Po Bo Cheng. And his assessment for both, and it's in the film, the film's been on YouTube for years, his assessment is, this is authentic. Hmm. This is real. And these people are telling what they believe to be the truth. Now, if you want, we can, you know, pardon me, we can horse around with,
I know that you want to
go ahead.
Well, it's more to be able to kind of understand the other side of the story, because I've heard the critiques, I've heard the disproving, but it's a matter of, okay, well, if I'm going to hear one side, I'd love to be able to hear the other side. And I know that when it comes to Billy himself, I know that Rich has a few questions that he wanted to be able to ask.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted, my thing is, I can never get my hands on it. You know, I don't have the money to travel. I don't know how I would go about that anyway. But being on this side of the world and not getting my hands on the evidence and being just a UFO researcher, and I know what I've captured on video. How come in 40-something plus years we've never seen anybody else with pictures like these, evidence? That's what's hard about believing it all. I don't know what's true anymore. I've heard so many different things, so I don't know where I stand on it, but how is that possible?
I don't understand. Are you saying, because you said we haven't seen any photos, so explain
to me. Not like his.
A second. No, of course not, because nobody was ever given the opportunity to take those photos, that kind of, you know, photography or films either, or and a video. There's a video in there too. They gave him a video. Someone gave him a video camera, not the ETs. The reason you don't see that is because everything that's captured on video these days, or iPhones or films or whatever, it's basically lights in the sky, 90%+ of which is secret military craft. According to the information in the Meier case, according to my own sense, I've had 7 sightings of UFOs. I've been within 20 feet of a small Clayaran craft in the mountains of Brazil, October 3rd, 10 o'clock, 2011, and one other sighting that I think was probably their craft. But the other ones, I'm very comfortable saying probably secret military. MUFON and these organizations, and jumping to that because we've raised the question about evidence, first of all, they actively suppress the Meier material, number one. Number two, when they get anything from their their field investigators and these nice people running around chasing lights in the sky, anything that's at all interesting, it is sent to the CIA and State Department. And we know that from a high-level person working in aerospace who was approached by MUFON to be a part of their organization and to whom this was revealed. I have that blog up on my website. I'm overstepping a little bit. I want to come back to your concern about the photos, but I will tell you, I am no fan of ufology. It is the biggest hoax itself. It is the least scientific field. It has the least credentialed, qualified people who know how to think and who can back up anything of substance. And this is one of the reasons why I like to refer to it as persona or gratin at UFO events. I used to, speak and present at things until I called out all the phony stuff in ufology. And people don't like it because it's an industry. This is an industry. So let me stop and give it back to you, because you were wanting to answer certain things about the photographs, I think you were speaking about.
Well, I think it's Richard who had the questions regarding them.
Yeah.
No, my question, I just want to know why we haven't seen anyone else with this type of library. That's why it's hard for, you know what I mean? It's like, was he the only person that's going to be chosen now? I mean, when's the next person coming around with these wedding cake videos?
Let me explain a little about this that a lot of people in ufology have a great problem with. The UFOs and ETs, and I refer to this as singularly authentic evidence, is the least important part of it. This has been done. Let's just, if we can accept for a moment in the discussion that, okay, there's intelligent space-traveling people. They're very far in advance of us. And remember, I said, what's the reason for all this? Okay, so they show up. They choose some kid, 5 years of age, and 76 years later, they still meet with them. They still have conversations. They still present tremendous amounts of energy, information, pardon me. So if it isn't about the UFOs, what's it about? And the answer is, and I titled my first self-produced DVD in 2004, The Meyer Contacts, the Key to Our Future Survival. This is literally about our future survival. It has been from the get-go, but they had to try to get our attention in a way that would be engrossing, it wouldn't create a whole lot of fear, if possible, and that we would be smart enough to work our way through debate, examination, scientific procedures, and then come into what I refer to as the prophetically accurate scientific and world event-related information, and realize that we have proven legal and scientific standards of proof that Meyer was the first person to publish. We now have over 200 specific examples of scientific and world event related prophetically accurate information. And that means everything from being the first person in 1951 to publish the information provided to him in the 40s on unnatural man-made climate change, global warming, the increased frequency and intensity worldwide of tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. It goes on and on and on, as well as geopolitical events pertaining to terrorism. He's the first person to warn specifically about radical fundamentalist Islamist terrorism that would arise. He publishes this in 58. He warns specifically about the Paris attacks, but his warnings are in 1981. He warns, it goes on and on, and very few people in ufology ever get there because they're still chasing the goddamn lights in the sky. Forget it. I tell people the least important thing you can do with your life right now is to worry about UFOs. If you want to know if Meyer's evidence is real, we have made freely available virtually everything you need to determine yourself. We even have these guys now who are listing their protocols for testing Meyer's photos, and anybody can do that, and you're going to come out with the same conclusions. Just as the sounds were analyzed and found to be irreproducible even with synthesizers, the metal samples were irreproducible to a IBM chemist, the patent-holding chemist, who said, I can't duplicate these. And for all the reasons that are listed, I still have all that on my website, because people who find this case want to know, well, why him, and what is the evidence real, and is it really singularly authentic, and why nobody else? Well, they can at least find out what's been done with independent analyses, and they can do their own stuff now. They can actually test the sounds themselves if they want to. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to say it seems, you know, for anybody who is going to experience something that's extraordinary and be given this type of incredible opportunity to be a messenger to humanity as a whole. It seems so incredible that it's someone just from like the Swiss Alps. And I know, like, for myself,
why?
Because it's, you would think that they would be like, you know, they would try and talk to the president, or they would try and talk to somebody in the military or in news. And, you know, there's this man who is given this extraordinary opportunity to be this conduit between this, you know, race of extraterrestrials and humankind. And, you know,
I'll give you an answer to that.
Please do.
I'll give you several answers. Number one, Switzerland is long known as a country of neutrality. They don't engage in wars with people. They are not bombing the hell out of every country on earth. They are not destabilizing governments, supporting terrorists all over the world, and messing with everybody. They mind their own damn business. They run their country like a Swiss watch. I was just there. It's admirable what they do as a people. And, you know, that may break down, too, with all of this pressure with globalization and all the idiots who are trying to destroy countries and destroy cultures through these types of things. Now, let's just say, okay, we can say why, Meyer, but let's look at the thing you just raised. Why didn't they contact the president? In 1979, Billy Meyer was authorized to compose a letter to turn over to the two of the investigators in the case. Those investigators were Lee and Britt Elders. They are based in Arizona. They still are. They have a company called Intercept. They, along with Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, were the primary investigative team leaders, and then there were auxiliary people, Jim Delatoso and Tom Welsh and Nils Ragnarud, and people who were all independent people and experts in their respective areas. Well, Lee and Britt were skeptics. They went with Wendell Stevens to Switzerland because they thought he was going to get ripped off, that the only ride he was going to take wasn't going to be in a UFO, it was going to be in his pocketbook, etc. So to their credit, and I knew all these people for more than 20 years now. As a matter of fact, I first met Lee and Britt Elders closer to 30 years ago. So they were given a letter that Meyer composed in rather problematic English, but it conveyed things. And Lee was told he could present this letter to the Carter administration because Lee had connections with the CIA and with government people. So they gave the letter to the Carter administration, to Jimmy, hopefully it got to Carter, and it was an offer for contact with these people, with the Pleiaren, under certain terms. Jimmy Carter turned it down. Now, I should add that since I've read that letter and have it on my website, I'm not surprised he turned it down. And I even said to Billy, I said it to him about 8 years ago, I said, Billy, what were they thinking? Didn't they really understand us, certainly Americans? And he said, well, strangely enough, for a long time, they really didn't. And he said this was, you know, early period, 1979. And then, you know, they came to understand more about us, but they were not authorized to look into people and delve into their personalities and their inner thoughts and all this. So they figured, here's the president of this country, most seemingly, you know, prosperous or advanced country on earth, as well as the most warlike, we will offer contact under these terms. Well, the problem was, I should say this, the problem wasn't really that they said, Billy Meyer will be our initial intermediary between us and you. I think that that could have worked out for a while. The problem wasn't that they said, you may not molest him or our ships or try to take possession of him. Okay, they probably could work. The problem was that they said to Jimmy Carter, Jimmy Carter, Baptist minister, you must inform the people in your country, the United States of America, that all of their religions and religious beliefs are based on fantasies and lies. Well, that didn't fly, did it? So, this we've got to remember something that I try to hammer away. Wherever human beings are involved, I don't care how advanced and how smart, eventually something will get screwed up and go wrong, and then we'll have to be fixed. It's been no different in this case. Yes, these people are highly advanced. Yes, they exceed us in technology and science by thousands of years. And they can do things that we, you know, we dream of in sci-fi, but it don't make them perfect. And they make mistakes. And generally what they do, if they make a mistake, they quickly own up and correct it. Now, what they haven't done, they have never yet, to my knowledge, and I'm involved with people searching through this all the time, they've never made a mistake about a scientific event or a prophetic announcement on their part about something that would happen with certainty. If they say this will happen as opposed to this may happen, that thing happens. And that's done through technology.
And speaking of technology, I know that Rich has to get ready to prep for his show. I know that he's been messaging me and saying that he's been having a fantastic time listening to this. And I know that he'd love to get you on the Paranormal Code as well. So I'll pass him along your contact information if possible.
Most appreciated. And I'm sorry if I talked over any of his questions for now, and I'll shut up if you have any that we still have time for.
Well, no. It was all perfect, actually. It was an honor sitting here sharing the airtime with you, because I've watched you over the years and read all your stuff. So for me, this was like opening a little gift. I loved it. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, because you're asking questions, and they're intelligent questions, and I'm never offended. I'm always delighted to try to do my best. So thank you, and I'll be glad to do a show with you, anything like that. We can be in touch with each other. It'll be my pleasure.
Oh, thank you very much. And Chris, thank you. I appreciate you having me on for tonight. You guys have a good night.
You too. Don't worry about like 10 or 15 minutes, Rich. I'll be chirping you from the cheap seats.
All right. See you later.
Sure, brother.
Bye, guys.
And I'm going to leave this last question as the biggest one. I know that this is one that's appeared on Wikipedia, and I know that with regards to Billy, it seems to be one of the biggest critiques and also the biggest opportunity to provide some pushback to those critiques. And I know that this isn't supposed to be a big debunked Billy Meier show, but you know, these are the questions that people have, especially in this day and age. With regards to his wife or his ex-wife coming forward in 1997 on German TV, I believe it was German TV, and essentially, well, outright saying that this, you know, these were models.
It
was a hoax. Now, again, I have been in relationships which have ended, you know, where the people did not necessarily have the best, or at least, you know, my ex-girlfriend didn't exactly have the best words to say about me.
Right.
And obviously with my current wife, she has nothing but good things to say about me, unless I forget to put the toilet seat down or something along those lines. And that's average marriage stuff. What's the biggest, you know, like, how big of a shock was that to hear? And like, what, like, how is this taken as far as, you know, as far as a critique?
Sure. Let me answer as best I can here. First of all, what happens to precede that is kind of interesting. As you say, acrimony between people who were once close and no longer are is not an unusual thing in human relations. Billy's a human being. His ex-wife's a human being. Everybody involved in this are human beings. This is why we want to get away from the nonsense of ufology about these amazing aliens, the space brother. It's nonsense. If there's real ETs, if this is real, they're real people. They have their ups, their downs, etc. Here's the thing. Their children, as well as she, are on record as being eyewitnesses to the craft. One of the clips we have in our film from 2008 shows one of the sons holding up a drawing he's done of one of the craft while he's there with his mother, who's talking about also seeing the craft. She's on record through another interview of having seen one of the ETs in the house with Meyer. Now, when she claims about models and claiming what she claims to be models have now been unequivocally been shown to be actual large craft, three different sizes, as a matter of fact, models in no way. And the whole thing about that craft being made from parts from trash, trash barrels and things like that, which Billy Meier, they are the first people to bring forward the photographs to show the similarity. The kick is that the trash cans were made after Meyer's photographs were ever released. The company made these things after the fact.
Huh.
So this is, again, find out, in my opinion, is this essentially, is the evidence here really not only true but ironclad? Go into that. And I answer all emails. I'm glad to go through things with people, because you got to get to the important stuff. What's coming down in this world? I mean, on every level. Some of this, which was foretold as far back as 1946 and 48, which we're having happen now and will continue without a doubt. We are going to see the eruption of major volcanoes in central Italy and big earthquakes there in northern Germany. In addition to what we see going on right now in Hawaii, and Meyer said that is going to be devastating to that island. There's no two ways about it. But the rest of what's coming from this, the northwest quake and tsunami that are going to hit off the Cascadian subduction zone, Meyer preempted the first scientific announcement on that by 3 years. We've had it on our website since 2005. OSU calls it a new discovery in 2008. The eruption, the coming eruption of Cumbre Vieja in the Canary Islands, could possibly devastate the entire East Coast of the U.S. and take something like 20 million lives. They already, the Pleiaren extraterrestrials, told us how to avoid that. The answers to many things have been provided, but the idiots in the UFO community who just want to run around and chase lights in the sky, they have no expertise in anything, but they think they're UFO experts, and they won't even delve into this. None of them will debate me, and it doesn't matter because they don't know what they're talking about. This kind of stuff is about our survival. And I mean, I know you're running tightly against the clock there. This is the stuff we should get to as soon as possible. Canada is going to be dragged into a war with Russia that Russia has with the U.S. And this has been long foretold. And this has been in print since 1987. And I couldn't figure out why Canada would be involved in a war with Russia and the U.S. And then in 2000 and about 2006 or 2008, there were a couple of things, I think it was right around then, that Canada did. Number one, they crafted a treaty with the Eastern European state of Georgia that really ticked off the Russians. Number two, they started to contest the mineral rights at the North Pole with Russia. Meyer told me in 2011, and we have it on film, that if it hadn't started already, and I don't think it had, there would be four major countries, U.S., Canada, Russia, and China, that would start to vie for the mineral rights at the North Pole and then later at the South Pole, and this was going to provoke great conflict. This is the stuff it's about, to try to help us prevent the lunacy of worldwide destruction because of the psychopaths that we have running our countries who do crazy things and all the secret agendas and the stuff that's done in our name that is just devastating to us. This is what the Meyer case is about. And the only way they tried to get our attention was through the ships they came in and worked their way down to us from there. So anytime anybody listening wants to, or if you would want to have a more discussion on that or any other aspect, including the physical evidence, I'm up for it, because I just feel that this is what's important to us. We want to find the truth, because if the Meyer case is, it's either the biggest, most impenetrable, longest running hoax in modern history, or it's the most important true story. There's nothing in between. We just can't find anything in between. My personal experience, and I don't just mean being close to one of these craft, that's just anecdotal. I don't care who's seen UFOs, and I don't care that I've seen them. My personal experience as an investigator working with real experts, sharing my stage with world-class astrophysicists, all this kind of stuff, who comes forward and says, I work with scientists who take this seriously. We believe we've made breakthroughs in our understanding of zero-point energy and hyperspace propulsion. I've got that document up on my website. So for people that want to get past theoretical and chasing lights in the sky and ooh and ah about UFOs and flush that crap down the toilet, all this to the Stars Academy and MUFON and every bit of disinformation that rots the brains of good people, find out what you can start to do. There are people up in Canada who have study groups of this, or who hold meetings, or this or that. You don't have to pay anything to join anything. You don't have to belong. You can get 90% of this for free and make up your own mind. But gosh, that's really what it's about, folks. It's not about whether he took a photograph of a woman that some people then modified.
And at least it allows people to have a little bit of context when they're looking into it themselves. And, you know, one thing, yes, that I'm going to at least be able to say is, if we're going to hear a theory or we're going to hear a claim, you know, I'm of the mind that unless I'm actually doing a full-on investigation myself and I'm looking into the full breadth of the data, you know, I can't,
sure,
you know, it's hard for me to be able to say, okay, well, this information is true or this information is false. I could say that there's other information out there that can countermand the information that you're stating. But at the end of the day, it's up to individuals to be able to say, hey, you know what? I have to be able to make this decision based on the evidence at hand from what one camp is saying or what another camp is saying, and to at least come to that realization or come to that conclusion objectively. The main purpose is to not simply to, I'm going to say, take everything on faith. You take faith to a certain extent is faith in oneself to be able to tell the difference between the truth and a lie. And that's all I'm asking for individuals out there to be able to do. And, you know, I have to say, at least for myself, that I do thank you and I do appreciate the fact that you took the time out of your day, especially being as jet-lagged as you are, to come on the show to at least be able to give that context for individuals while they're going through this type of research.
It's really my pleasure. And if people do go through that type of research, they should really do it according to using the scientific method, accepted protocols for investigation, such as means, motive, and opportunity. And if you embark on that, you will find that not only are there hundreds of clear UFO photos from Meyer, there's 26,000 plus, probably about 28,000 plus pages of information. The conversations he's had with these people, date and time stamped, matter of record, copyrighted, and there's websites that have these. And you will be able to, you know, scratch your head and go, okay, well, let's see what this means. Let's determine the truth for ourselves. That's, you know, all I can do. And I'll help anybody that wants to, you know where to look for this stuff and all. And yeah, if you want to buy films and books, that's great. But the first thing is to look at everything that's free, to go to my blog, engage in the discussions if you want to, question things, and we're there for you. And I really do appreciate your time immensely.
It's my pleasure as well. Let me just get the outro music. And this is, is it actually playing? Oh, no, that's the wrong channel. That's what happens when I try and do things without actually looking. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, for all of you who are out there, and if you are part of the Patreon group, we're going to have an after show, and we're going to listen into Rich's show, and maybe you can hear me and join in on the Skype so that, you know, we can have a little bit of fun together. Talk about tonight's show, talk about the rest of the month, talk about our 100th episode that's coming up, and discuss some of the evidence that I've been able to uncover regarding To the Stars Academy, which I think a lot of you may be interested to hear. So that's going to be coming up in about, it's 10 o'clock at the top of the hour on the Eastern Coast, and it's 7 p.m. on the West Coast. Go take a 10-minute break, come back, hit Patreon, and I will have a link to the YouTube special, unlisted, secret, top secret, tip-top secret stream at that time. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Chris George Zuger, and this has been a cavalcade of wonderful people, Michael Horn, Denver Michaels, and Rich Giordano. Have yourselves a wonderful afternoon, and I will see you guys all next week.